Let's do it then.
All right.
Brace yourselves.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 193 for Friday, September 25th, 2009. On today's show, we anticipate the games of this year and early next year, look at a growing list of DirectX 11 games, imagine a world where Microsoft owns EA, answer your listener questions, and more. I'm your host and PC Gamers Reviews editor, Dan Stapleton, and with me today are our previews editor, Evan Lottie.
How you doing? It's Friday.
And our podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
Hi-oh.
was that like Ed McMahon, like falling down?
I decided it was like lame right when I started saying it, so I tried to take it back, but then I couldn't.
If only there was some editing trick you could do to remove something and a recording.
No, man, this
is
live.
And replace it with something else.
We'll do it live.
Yes. We'll do it live. All right.
Oh, man.
Yes. We're off to a great start here, obviously. We're a little bit thin on the ground today because everybody's busy. It's weird. But I guess a three-man crew should be enough to handle the relatively slow news week this week. I guess the highlight, as it were, is actually kind of a low light in that Assassin's Creed 2 has now slipped from 2009 to early 2010.
Is that just for the PC, or is that for both?
It's just for the PC.
Oh man, they're doing that same thing again.
Yeah, it's always kind of a drag.
It is a drag.
Yeah, and I was really excited about it when I heard that they were going to do a simultaneous release this time, because for Assassin's Creed 1, there was a huge delay. It was, like 6 months?
Yeah.
Yep.
I really liked the first game, you know? Like, I love playing games on PC, too.
I liked the first few hours of the first one.
I liked the first one, dude.
I played all the way through it. It was a good game. It wasn't a great game. It got pretty repetitive. And, I mean, Batman Arkham Asylum's combat just blows it out of the water.
Oh, well, agreed.
Yeah, so hopefully they've stepped it up a bit for the next one, but I'm still a little bit sad to see it not coming out simultaneous release, because it does you know, it's not a huge delay, but it still, you know, it puts the PC on, you know, kind of a second tier that you know, that doesn't you know, make you doesn't instill great confidence, I should say. They say they're using the time to, you know, deliver the best possible experience, and I'm hoping that means that it will take less than 10 steps to quit out of the game this time.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was really difficult to quit out of Assassin's Creed 1. But hopefully, you know, I made a video on that and put it on YouTube, showing like all the steps it took to quit out, and I think it's been viewed like 400,000 times. I'm hoping a couple of those times were some people from Ubisoft.
That's more views than any of my videos. I've spent my entire 20s trying to go viral.
But your videos are all of your cat.
Oh, well, that should work. Damn it.
I guess cat videos are big news on YouTube. But
I just love that when you come out of the dream machine or whatever the hell it's called, I feel like I stepped into Shaun White snowboarding. Because he has like this hoodie on, and he like walks all like a snowboarder.
That's true. Yeah,
that'd be a cool game. You just like go into different games from inside of a game.
Yeah. Well, you play a snowboarding game, and then you jump into a virtual reality machine, and you're playing Assassin's Creed all of a sudden.
Dude, totally. It's like the Ubisoft meta experience. I want it.
But yeah. So Assassin's Creed isn't the only one to have this happen. Mm. To have a delay like this. First of all, like StarCraft 2 is the most notable slip from 2009 to 2010. There's also BioShock 2 was really originally supposed to come out this year. Mafia 2, Stalker, Call of Pripyat. Who am I forgetting? There are several others.
Borderlands got bumped.
That was a very small delay, though. It was a 6-day delay.
Oh, really?
It went from October 20th to October 26th.
Oh, that's tolerable.
Right. So that's fine.
Singularity is another one.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's happening a lot. Although Assassin's Creed is unique in that only the PC version was delayed. But you know, better late than never, I guess. And better late than on time and broken.
Hey, I still, you know, at this rate, I have no time to play games, barely. So they want to spread them out. That's good.
What's taking up all your time?
Batman. No, just, so you, just work. No, yeah. What?
You have no time to play other games.
Right.
Gotcha. But yeah, and you know, I'm actually kind of in favor of spreading games out like that, because you know, it used to be that everybody would make the holiday season, you know, no matter what. And if they slipped, it was kind of a disaster for them. But now they're spreading them out more over like what used to be kind of a dead season in gaming, where nothing would come out. And it's I actually prefer that, because there's not as much of a glut in the holidays. You actually have time to play all the stuff you want to play. And you know, it's just a better pace, I should say.
I think we need to make a list of what is still coming out for the holidays.
I happen to have one right here.
Oh, dude.
Just like the major ones. And, you know, this isn't the definitive list, but some of the highlights of the rest of the year.
Exactly. Yeah.
You've still got Modern Warfare 2. You've got Dragon Age Origins.
Oh, Borderlands.
Dead Left 4 Dead 2, Operation Flashpoint 2, and Alpha Protocol, and that would keep you busy.
That's a kick-ass list right there.
Yeah, that'll keep you busy from now until the end of the year easily.
Wait, is there a date on Mass Effect 2?
That's next year.
Okay.
So, those are all games I want to play extensively, or most of them. I wasn't the biggest Call of Duty fan, but you know, maybe I'll jump in there again and. Because like I never actually got into Modern Warfare multiplayer because Punkbuster broke it for me, like it just kept punting me out.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
It's pretty awful. I'm some kind of punk or something. But you know, I'll give another shot with Modern Warfare 2. I wasn't that enamored of the single player in Call of Duty 4 just because it was a little bit too whack-a-mole for me. It was enjoyable.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable. Don't get me wrong, but
I loved it.
It didn't have like really the depth of gameplay I like. I played it through, had a good time, and it wasn't blown away. But yeah, I'll definitely play that. Dragon Age Origins, I will play like crazy. And that game is built to be replayed time, like at least six times. So there are six different origins, right?
So what origin, that begs the question, are you going to pick first?
I don't know. I typically like to start a game like that as a magic user.
Really,
and then I usually get my ass kicked, and then go back and start as a warrior, that so I can just, you know, lay out the damage. I have this weird tendency to want to play a finesse character from the beginning, and then like utterly fail at it, and then just fall back on the hitting things.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's interesting because I mean, as you're learning the game mechanics and maybe choosing skills that don't help you, for example, or something, or you know, just testing out the system. Being durable and like being able to take damage and soak up damage is helpful. But yeah, that's interesting.
But I want to be a wizard.
Fine.
Yeah. And then Borderlands is also going to be a very replayable game, and it's built basically like a first person Diablo. So you've got, you know, randomly generated loot. You can just replay that over and over again and have different experience because you're using different guns. And also the four player co-op is a blast. I've played a little bit of it so far. And it's, you know, it's a lot of fun to just coordinate your attacks with everybody and drive around together in the buggy doohickeys. Left 4 Dead 2, obviously. Gonna spend a lot of time playing that. Operation Flashpoint 2, I think, Evan, that's more up your alley.
It is, I suppose. You know, there's some speculation in the community that I can neither confirm nor deny, because I played some of it, but I haven't played the whole thing, that, you know, it's going to be more of a compromise between Call of Duty and the original Op Flash, because it is coming out on consoles as well. But at the same time, you know, it's great to play another realistic shooter like Arma, which I have a great affection for, and you know, I welcome it. I look forward to it.
Yeah, and well, you've already got your Arma like ultra realistic thing. You know, maybe if somebody else did try to do like the exact same thing, that wouldn't necessarily be great. I mean, why do you need two of those? So maybe a compromise between that and the more accessible shooter is great for people that aren't quite as in, and they like the idea of a realistic shooter but don't like all the logistics that come with it. So, you know, a little bit more accessibility might be a good thing.
Certainly, yeah. And I know there will be a demo available on PC post-release. So, right. Yep, that's cool.
And there's Alpha Protocol. Evan, I know you've played some of that.
I have, yeah. I was lucky enough to be one of the first people to play it hands-on. And
hopefully not the last.
Hopefully not. It's funny bringing that up. I'm a little concerned about how well it's going to do, you know, just in terms of the marketing Sega's done so far for it. I haven't seen a lot out there for it, but they could be holding it back. Anyway, I mean, anybody that enjoyed the combat in Mass Effect or is familiar with it, that's kind of what you have to expect in terms of the raw gameplay. But again, the point I kind of keep emphasizing is they've built an action dialogue system, essentially. They've built a dialogue system, you know, like Mass Effect, like other BioWare, dialogue-driven RPGs.
Oh, this is not a BioWare game, by the way.
It is not. It's Obsidian.
But they do have kind of a close relationship with BioWare.
They do. But what they've done differently is, so when you're talking to a character, it's not, okay, I have X topics to talk about, and I can go back and forth and sort of jump between them, and they'll say the same thing when I ask them about the same thing, and it's a linear system where you have a time limit attached to, if somebody asks you a question, you have 3 or 4 seconds to respond, and you choose a stance, right? And a stance can be aggressive or suave or flirtatious or, you know, any combination of things, it's going to vary.
Flatulent.
Yeah, and it just creates a situation where you have this, like, hot quiz of, like, this pop quiz, not hot quiz, I don't know what that is.
I know what that is.
Of how you want to respond very quickly, and it suits the genre of the spy, you know, the spy genre, honestly, like where you have to lie, you have to think on your feet, you have to bribe your way past situations, and it just gives the dialogue a pace that makes it more of a gameplay thing and less of a story thing, and that's exciting.
Yeah, that's a cool element that, and you know, all the time, like when I play an RPG, sometimes I do like to really take my time and consider what's going to happen if I call this guy a jerk or if I kiss his ass. But you know, the kind of off the cuff reaction almost does kind of make it seem more like a role playing thing, where you're playing kind of puts you in the situation rather than. I guess I should amend that. It's not as much a role playing thing, but more it puts you in the situation because you're thinking more as you than, okay, what would my character do? And you know, there's going to be some of that, but it's like more of a quick off the top of your head. What are you going to do?
Exactly. And I sort of think about, I remember taking like one of those standardized tests one time. It was like a personality test where they said, they encourage you to not like take a lot of time to figure out what you want to respond with and just sort of pick the thing that sort of came to mind first and impulsively. And that was sort of supposed to be the most honest reflection of what you would want to choose to that question. And I kind of feel the same way about Alpha Protocol. Like I want to feel challenged and I want to feel like impulsive. And I don't think I've been put in a situation to do that with the game before.
Well, what happens if you fail, if you don't pick a response in time?
I think it defaults to one. I think it starts off defaulted to one. So
it'd be hilarious if it was just awkward silence,
just a mumble.
That would be great. But one of the cool things actually, once you complete the game, you can unlock like what's the equivalent of a veteran option, right? When you're creating a character, you sort of choose what they are and your difficulty level. But when you complete the game, you can select this veteran option instead, and that allows you a certain set of new dialogue options that you're sort of bringing to the table, and maybe you're better able to get past a guard or something and then talk somebody out of something. So, I don't know, it's kind of a cool bonus.
But what if you fail to make a response in time, it just tells a yo mama joke?
That would be lovely.
Anyway, so of those games, or you know, another contender that you might want to bring to the table, which is your most anticipated of the remainder of 2009?
Oh my gosh.
You have like 3 seconds to respond. Is it going to be your mom?
I brought it up on the podcast a few times, but Global Agenda is definitely it. I need to play a game where I have a jetpack And it's kind of that simple, honestly. Like, whatever game we're playing week to week, whether it's Demigod, whether it's...
Dude, have you played Scribblenauts yet?
Can you draw a jetpack?
Yeah, you just say jetpack and you can do all the puzzles.
Okay. That's fine. so whatever game I'm playing, Batman or, you know, whatever I'm revisiting, I always come back to Team Fortress 2. I always come back to Team Fortress 2. It's where my friends and I congregate.
There's no jetpack in TF2.
I know, but what I'm saying is, like, I want to get away from TF2. Like there's, even though I enjoy it every night, I'm desperately, like, searching for a multiplayer space that is new and exciting, and, like, my friends and I can soak up together. And but I can't, because everybody just keeps playing TF2, and I keep coming back to it, and I feel tied to it, and I feel emotionally attached to it. But I just want a new multiplayer shooter, I guess. And then I'm hoping that Global Agenda can be that game for me. I don't think Left 4 Dead 2 is gonna. I'm really concerned with how much time I'm going to spend with it. I'm really not sure. You know, sort of reflecting on how much it died off, and I basically haven't played it, like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, in 5 or 6 months. The original.
Well, I think you're likely to play it again soon. On for example, October 27th. Oh wait, no, sorry, September 29th, which is next week. I'm betting you're going to play it on September 29th.
Gosh, yeah, probably.
Which happens to be coincidentally happens to be the day that the Crash Course DLC comes out.
You lost
Dan. What?
You lost you for a sec, sorry.
Really? Oh,
no, we're back.
I had him.
Really? Wow. When you're saying coincidentally, I lost you.
Okay. Well, coincidentally, October 20, sorry. Okay. I got to get this date straight. I got to be able to say coincidentally too. Coincidentally, the September 29th is also the same day when the Crash Course DLC is going to come out. To whet our appetites for Left 4 Dead 2. And Evan, you can talk a little bit about what we can expect from that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially kind of a snack, to be honest. It's only two maps, and it falls after the first. Campaign in the original Left 4 Dead, the No Mercy stage, where, you know, after you get picked up by the helicopter on the roof of Mercy Hospital, you know, what happens in the second chapter? You don't really see a helicopter. And
well, when you say two maps, it's like the maps or the campaigns in Left 4 Dead 1 were four stages, right? There were areas you would go through and fight zombies and then get to a safe room and then go through another area and get to a safe room, get through another area, get to a safe room and then get to the extraction point. This one just has one safe room and then an extraction point, right?
Yeah, that's fair to say. There's a finale in a safe room, as you mentioned. It makes sense for Valve. They wanted to produce something that's sort of bite-sized, because you're not always in a situation where you can dedicate, you know, sometimes 90 minutes in versus or close to an hour. I think almost all of our campaigns clock in at exactly an hour, actually, if we're playing just four player Left 4 Dead. So it makes sense to release something smaller that you can manage in, you know, after dinner time or whatever.
I think it's pretty interesting to me that they've decided to go with a bite-sized chunk for the Crash Course DLC rather than a full campaign, because with the Left 4 Dead 2 stuff, all of those campaigns are longer than the original, right?
Not necessarily in time. I mean, definitely in distance. In my experience, yes. Yeah, from what I've seen and played, yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of the points they made when we went out to see it the first time. These campaigns are going to be significantly longer than the original four. So it's kind of a different direction. I wonder if in Left 4 Dead 2, I mean, because they said when they announced the Crash Course DLC that they're doing this because they got some feedback that that people didn't necessarily have that much time they wanted to put into a game and still wanted to get to the finale. So I wonder if they'll have modes in Left 4 Dead 2 that allow you to do something like that.
That's really the one main thing they haven't revealed yet, right? Other than showing the chainsaw, they haven't revealed what the new mode is.
Right.
I've kind of really, like, this is kind of my fanboy wish, but I've wanted it to be an escort mode where one of the survivors doesn't have weapons and maybe three of them do, and you have to get them from point A to point B, or escort like an NPC survivor from point A to point B. I just think that'd be really fun.
but it probably wouldn't work.
I don't know why not. I'm sure Valve is smart enough. Yeah, you're good. If you had, you know, skills. but yeah, so Andy, what was your most anticipated game?
Wait, let's back up. There's a Left 4 Dead 2 demo as well coming out soon?
There is, in just before Halloween.
Ah, good timing, I guess.
October 27th.
Cool. I'm looking forward to Alpha Protocol the most out of all those games. Just because it sounds like one of those games that's just a suck for your like attention, and you want to just get right in there, experience the whole story, talk to some chicks on airplanes. That's the kind of stuff I just eat up in games, though. You know, like just those, the thing Evan was talking about in his preview, where you're just like having a conversation with somebody in the game world. I love that stuff, dude.
Right, and it's not a conversation that's epic or like is the guiding factor for the story, and it's gonna it's gonna branch the story in direction A or B. Like you're just talking with somebody that is a character, and you get some information from them, and it's a nice kind of calm moment before some action, you know?
Yeah, it's like that kind of pacing in a world that is I don't want to say like deep in the sense of, you know, philosophically like revealing, but just deep in the sense that you fall into it and you're so into it, because that sounds like
immersive.
It's so immersive.
and I'm also looking forward to playing with the weapons customization feature, which is kind of the crafting element, I guess, if you want to think about it in terms of being an RPG. Mm-hmm. But one of the cool facts I calculated from the preview was, So there's a type of ammo called subsonic ammo, and it's kind of like silenced bullets.
That's kind of whatever you're about to say. Whatever you're about to say, you have to preface it with "according to my calculations."
so according to my calculations, and if I remember correctly, the bullets cost $2,000 for 30 rounds in the game. Wow. And when I divided that out, that's $67 a bullet. So every time you fire around, that's more than the price of the retail game.
Didn't Chris Rock have a routine about that? You don't ban guns, you just make bullets really expensive.
Yes, that would have been an excellent opportunity for an obscure caption. Well, semi-obscure.
I think we've got a possibility for what's it called? Microtransactions.
Indeed. Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad to hear it, Andy.
Yeah, dude. What about you, Dan? What's your most anticipated?
I'm kind of torn. I think I might have to go with Dragon Age.
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, that's probably my second most too.
I am hungry for a good RPG.
So what are you looking forward to most about Dragon Age? Is it the seeing the story branching together? Is it the combat system? Is it just being in a world BioWare created? Or
I do like BioWare's storytelling a lot, and basically their gameplay does have a way of hooking me in. Even though I'm not, you know, by nature like a super RPG player, you know, I do like some RPGs, but I don't like play every RPG, and fantasy RPGs in particular don't always grab me. But from what I've seen of Dragon Age so far, it does look very promising in terms of storytelling and combat and just your decisions having a significant impact on the game.
It's because Tim Curry's in it, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly not because Kate Mulgrew is in it.
Captain Janeway.
Go to hell.
Is the voice of a dragon. She actually is.
Yeah. I can't wait to kill her. But yeah. that'll make it more satisfying. It's like with Star Trek Elite Force. One of my favorite things to do in that game was to turn on the cheat codes and start incinerating the bridge crew. Like, you're annoying, you're annoying, you're annoying.
Tom Paris, die.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Well, Neelix was always the first to go. it was really annoying, though, because in that game they had, like, a friendly fire kind of thing where it would because, you know, you can't kill the main characters, or, you know, the game can't go forward. So if you start shooting at the bridge crew, it would end the game. So I was never able to kill them all, but I really wanted to. Anyway,
they're there,
Dan. Dragon Age will give me another opportunity, and I'll have the option to slay the Janeway dragon.
I've got to say about Dragon Age, I just can't wait to manage a party of characters. Like, that's what I'm interested in doing. Just, you know, it's always fun to play with their equipment and their abilities and just kind of feel like you're getting a sense of their personalities in combat. It's really satisfying. And I haven't been able to do that much this year.
Yeah. I hope that game is just an ostensibly PC like experience through and through.
But it is, you know, PC lead development. Oh, so, yeah. And the PC has its own interface. They've completely redone the interface for the PC, or, you know, they developed it separately from the version that will be on the Xbox. So it's an entirely different interface, and I've seen them side by side, and they look nothing alike.
Take that, Xbox.
So. Yeah. And in terms of that sort of desire for complexity that I think you're expressing, Andy, one of the things that reassured me most, I haven't seen it in a long time, so it may have changed, is the party AI system that you can sort of customize and play with.
Mm. The rule sets that you can add into to each character.
Exactly. I mean, you can really think about it in terms of programming, basically, where you're saying...
Yeah, like scripting, basically.
Yeah, if character X has less than 30% HP, he will become aggressive, or he will heal somebody, or he will retreat, or...
Yeah.
If I use ability X, this character will use ability Y. It really seemed to be there for me.
Yeah, I've never seen a character customization or AI customization system that in depth. I mean, they have layers to it. Like, you can just set them to aggressive or defensive or whatever, but you can also just go deeper and tell them exactly what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm. Specific items, specific abilities, very situational. Yeah,
that I don't know how deep into that I'll get. I mean, I sometimes I like to tinker with it, but I almost invariably end up like breaking something. Like, they don't do exactly what I want them to, and I just get pissed off. So hopefully either I will figure it out, or the basic pass, you know, aggressive defensive stances are good enough that I won't need to. But anyway, moving on, we have from the rumors I'm really glad turned out not to be true department, there was speculation this week that Microsoft wanted to buy EA, which I think would have been a disaster for PC gaming.
Oh my goodness.
Just based on Microsoft's recent history with the platform, like the last 2 years, they put out virtually no PC games, either developing or publishing. And, you know, say what you will about EA and their draconian copy protection and their tendency to make some rushed crap games once in a while. At least they're still making PC games. You know, they treat the platform pretty well on the whole. But fortunately, Microsoft has said they have no plans to acquire EA. Which is better than a no comment, but still not a guarantee it would never happen. I mean, honestly, if I were Microsoft, I would think about it. I mean, EA has a lot of good franchises that they could block up for the Xbox if they wanted to.
I'd be curious to see what areas like they would be sort of internally competing with themselves if they bought EA. I can't imagine it would be too many. I mean, Microsoft has Halo. They have Age of Empires that they don't do anymore. I'm trying to think what they publish. Gears of War. I mean, mostly action games on 360.
Well, and they would be competing with themselves with Army of Two, but right. That's not a PC game anyway. I mean, they would be. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know.
Dead Space is, you know, competing with every third-person action game. So that's, but yeah, I don't know.
No, but I mean, think about how the ramifications that would go down, because. Then you think about every EA game never coming out for PlayStation. Like, what?
Or PC.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it would suck. I'm really glad it's apparently not happening.
Like, there's got to be some sort of Illuminati who's like, no, that can't happen.
A game Illuminati?
Yeah.
That's his division.
I don't know if there's one of those. Otherwise, it would have stopped a lot of crappy things. like Microsoft shutting down Ensemble, for example.
Yeah.
But so there was also some talk this week about THQ possibly being up for sale, and you know that hasn't been confirmed or denied by anybody. But I personally hope that, you know, if it does turn out to be true that they don't get purchased by somebody who owns their own platform like Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo, because yeah. I would really hate to see Relic become a first party developer.
Wait, making WiiWare games?
Yeah, that would be. Awful. And they did make a console game a little while back.
Like the Warhammer Fire Warrior game or something?
THQ did. I don't think Relic did that. It was a action game. Yeah, huh. I never played that one. But in any case, I would really hate to see them get locked down on some non-PC platform, especially before they put out Homeworld 3.
Yeah,
I mean, they gotta do that.
Oh, it was called The Outfit. It was like a 360 launch title.
Right. So anyway. they have done some console development, but they're still primarily a PC developer with, you know, Company of Heroes and Warhammer these days. Those are both PC exclusives and both great games. So
I've got some real quick before you move on, some THQ bonus trivia.
What?
Which I know is abundant. What does THQ stand for?
Oh. Do they even know? Oh, it's like toy headquarters or yes. toy something. Yeah, toy that's headquarters
it.
Q.
That's it.
What's the Q? Oh, HQ. Yeah, toy HQ
quarters.
Yeah, I'm smart. I managed to be both smart and stupid in one sentence. Yeah.
Congratulations.
What do I win?
I can shoot you with my new Nerf gun.
That's technically not a prize. Another little announcement that came out this week was if you have your sights on a fancy new Radeon 5800 series graphics card, the first to support DirectX 11.
Locked on.
You will be pleased to support that there. Pleased to hear that there is a growing list of games that plan to support DX 11. Dirt 2, Stalker, Call of Pripyat, Aliens vs. Predator are all being developed to support DirectX 10, and Battleforge and Dungeons & Dragons Online will be patched to support it.
I mean, 11.
And there are, yeah, who knows what impact that will actually have on the games, but it's nice to know that that ATI's selling point isn't we support Schmivels, and, you know, it's like, well, what the hell is that? Nobody's going to use that. But with DirectX 10, I mean, DirectX 10 was kind of overhyped and didn't really turn out to make that much of a difference in anything. And a lot of games are still, you know, using DirectX 9 because they're ports from consoles that don't have DirectX 10. And the ones that do have DX 10 built in, just like there are some nice little bells and whistles, but it's not really a big difference. I mean, it's less of a difference in my opinion than physics acceleration. You know, I would rather have physics effects in a game than DX 10 effects. Hopefully, I mean, like they're talking up like the tessellation support of DX 11, which will make objects appear more round, even with fewer polygons.
so wait a sec. That's basically their fancy word because they don't like the idea of having a bullet point that says now with rounder circles.
I think that's the end result. Tessellation. Okay. To my understanding, tessellation is somewhere in between where the artists don't necessarily have to define the detail as much. Like it kind of generates the detail. I think that's right. What it means.
Yeah, it's like a procedural generation of a rounded edge is my understanding of it. So
okay.
Rather than spending a bunch of polygons to make a sphere, you can use fewer of them, and the video card will generate all the polygons that would have been in there, and it's better for performance.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
So it's actually kind of neat.
I'm on board.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a neat thing that they could potentially show some improvements, but we'll have to wait and see. But Andy, I understand you recently made a purchase.
Oh my gosh, this was like the fastest video card like review posted on the website to me buying it like ever. Like every time you see a new video card, you're like, oh my god, yes! And then you're like, oh, I'm never gonna get it. But this thing dropped and it was like 5870, $380. I was like, I have to buy this right now. And so, I went to Newegg, got the auto notify for one of them. And then, the email came in, I went to it, it was already gone. And then like 2 hours later, I was randomly searching again on Newegg and a new one, like one of the new manufacturers just showed up, like the XFX just showed up on the list. And so nice. I was able to add to cart. So it's on
Same
the way.
Price?
Same price, yeah.
Does it say when it's going to ship out to you?
I got overnight, so.
Wow. Well, but I mean,
I haven't got the shipping notice yet. I just did it like last night. So let me.
Really?
I got a shipped status on my 5870.
Awesome. Nice. That's. Excellent work on ATI's part there.
Yeah,
BFG.
XFX, yeah.
XFX, okay.
Super lucky on my part for just hitting, searching at that exact moment that they, because I'm sure they're not available anymore.
Right, you got the rush order.
Yeah, the first of
well, good job.
The first bit. So I'm super stoked, you know?
Yeah, what are you running right now?
I'm still running an 8800 GT.
Wow.
So I guess I'll lose PhysX, though.
You will lose PhysX, but this will be a significant step up in performance. Yeah. Like, huge. That's going from a very competent mid-range card to, like, the top of the line.
Yeah, I know. And for only $400, and that includes overnight shipping?
Wow. Tune in next week to see how crazy happy Andy is.
Yeah, or crazy sad if UPS tosses it into the truck, and it breaks.
Yeah.
That happened to me once. Like, the first, like, high-end video card I bought was a, it was like, it wasn't even that high-end. It was like mid-range. Before that, I was like, on the floor. But I got a GeForce 4600 Ti. And it, I was really excited, opened it up, put it through in the computer. And turned it on, and it, like, the screen was all garbled. So, oh. No.
Oh,
but
no.
It was great once I got it working. But once I shipped it back and they shipped me a new one. But it was heartbreaking.
I need to get a bigger desk and a new monitor. I can run three monitors now.
Does it actually have three monitor ports on it?
It has four.
Four.
It has two DVIs, nice. One HDMI, and one display port.
That was one of their big things, is that you can run like that, at least three monitors off of it. They were running like six monitors off of a single card, weren't they? On in a demo.
Yeah, that was a special card that had six display ports.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll be very very interested to hear your results. You ought to download like the 3D Mark benchmarks and compare.
Yeah, I should run one now and then one when I get the new one. It'll just be ridiculous.
Yeah, it'll be a nice little tidbit for next week. If you can remember to do that.
Hey guys, love the podcast. I was wondering if you guys, as game journalists, ever have contact with like other game journalists, like Zero Punctuation or others that aren't necessarily in the PC gaming realm, like the Xbox Magazine. Hey, thanks for answering this question, and love the podcast and the magazine.
We never talk to them.
I never talk to Xbox Magazine.
No, they're actually just one floor down from us, so we talk to them all the time. We also have the Nintendo Power guys next door and the PlayStation Official Magazine guys across the hall, and Games Radar also across the hall. So we talk to those guys a lot. Yahtzee of Zero Punctuation fame is actually in Australia, so we don't hear much from him, although he did used to do a column for us, so we were in contact with him until he was basically too busy to to keep doing it. I guess those videos he makes, he's done 100 of them now, but those videos do take some effort on his part, so he wasn't able to keep doing the column.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if I have like any big friends at other outlets. I played Dungeons and Dragons with a couple of the guys from Xbox and Rob Smith, who's a former PC Gamer editor and
former OXM editor and former PTOM editor.
Yeah, he's done it all. He's fantastic. But I mean, usually kind of day to day, I'll message some guys on Twitter or go back and forth with them on Twitter or IM. And
yeah, we see people from GameSpot and IGN and all the other places on at every preview event we go to. So we socialize with those guys.
Mm-hmm. I was on the same plane with Jeff Gertzman last year for PAX.
Hi, PC Gamer. This is Jake DeGear from Blackstone Mass, and I was wondering why games come out in groups. What I mean by this is recently Demigod, Heroes of New Earth is in development, and League of Legends is in beta. All seem to be a similar Dota-type gameplay, all coming out within a couple months of each other. Is this because this is a new hot thing that people want, or is this just luck of the draw? Or is this other companies trying to counter other companies by seeing their game and then making their own game as quick as they can to get some money out of the bandwagon? Just wondering what you guys thought. Thanks, and have a good day.
So I think you can't necessarily say, in the specific case he mentioned, that League of Legends or Heroes or Demigod, I mean, the development itself is not reactive. I mean, nobody can crank out a game. I mean, All these games were announced maybe a year ago, if I'm correct, maybe less. And nobody can crank out a game that quickly, of course. So,
and generally, a game is announced, after it's been in development for at least a year. So you can't really play catch up like that. unless you like modify a project you've already gotten in progress to more closely compete with something, another announced product. But yeah, I don't think that's it. I think in this particular case, it probably just happened to work out that there were three, Dota style games in development around the same time. You know, there was all three of these companies that are making these games are smaller, kind of independent. I mean, Gas Powered is an independent company. The League of Legends guys, that's their first game, right? Heroes of New Earth, also a first game from that group. But which one is actually developed by a group of Dota developers?
So some of the Riot Games folks, worked with the Dota All-Stars mod. So.
Right. So that's what I was thinking of. So, you know, it's a trend, basically. I mean, it's same thing with, you know, why were there so many World War II games, coming out? Although that was, you know, more of a mainstream thing. This is more of a, you know, smaller developers capitalizing on a trend. Like, you know, they all, I guess, looked at Dota and said, hey, there are a bunch of people playing this and it's, you know, just a mod that somebody made or a group of people made and we should make a polished professional product and see if it can, catch on the same way. Just identifying a trend that looks successful and trying to, you know, capitalize on it.
And I think it's an exciting one in the sense that it builds enthusiasm for the genre, it builds interest in the genre, and people have, you know, people can migrate between a couple games. I know Josh has been doing that between Heroes and League of Legends, and choose the one that they feel suits them. So it's of benefit to PC gamers for sure.
Yeah. In the case of the Monkey Island explosion, where just heads exploded because LucasArts timed that well on purpose, you know?
Monkey Island explosion?
Well, there was like two games at once, you know?
Oh,
the remake, yeah, and the new Tales.
Yeah, I mean that was strategic. You want to capitalize on enthusiasm for both games. It's in the interest of both companies. So
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know LucasArts and Telltale in that case were working together. They
yeah. No, you know, it was all
LucasArts licensed the Monkey Island franchise to Telltale. So
oh yeah.
So yeah, they're working together to make the biggest splash possible there.
It's all a machine, man.
Teamwork.
We're all part of the machine.
I wouldn't go that far. Evan, what the heck have you been playing?
I've been rationing Batman. That has been my strategy for consuming it.
Yeah, dude. I could write.
I've been.
Not to interrupt you.
No, it's fine.
But dude, please do. I want to write like a thesis on Batman.
Fan fiction.
No, I just want to. If I wish I was still in school, because I would base my entire thesis on Batman.
Really?
No, what
the hell would you write about?
I'm just kidding. I don't. Okay. I have no idea. Oh.
You're just very, very enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's this weird like new game design. You know what I mean? Kind of.
How so?
Like it's a console game, but it's such a good game that I'm willing to like forgive it. That it's a console game, many thoughts about that.
Well, first of all, I mean the controls are flawless. I mean the default controls work on PC; they're responsive. You don't forget where they are, and the combat and combo system works fine with mouse and keyboard. Like I've never been tempted to try gamepad. I've never felt inhibited, you know. And that's for the variety of tasks you're doing within the game. That's very impressive, and that's an achievement.
Yeah, and I hesitate to even really call it a console port just because it's so well done for the PC that it feels like a native game, except for the save system, which, you know, is a kind of console slot save, auto save kind of thing, which is kind of annoying. And, just some of the menu stuff is a little bit console-y.
Well, I guess what I mean isn't necessarily that it's a console game because it was developed on console, but I mean it's like it's of this new generation of games that are sort of, you know, third person brawler Unreal Engine game, like, but it's so freaking tight that it stands above like so much stuff, you know.
Well, I think it does a great job of, you know, borrowing what's successful from a game like BioShock, right, where you have this narrator slash antagonist like Andrew Ryan, like the Joker, that's sort of speaking to you in this enclosed facility. But they do a great job of making it their own, right? They're not just simply.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, I don't want to use the phrase like copy pasting, but they do a great job of making that gameplay and that style of gameplay and design fit the canon and fit Batman so well.
I would just say that they followed BioShock's example in that they polished it so thoroughly that the environment is really immersive and designed the art so well and levels well, so that it's so immersive that, you know, it really has its own feel and it sets the mood.
Yeah, like it's very distilled and almost like, I hate to use the word like simplified, but it's simplified in a way that makes it so fun. You know what I mean? Like, because you don't have to, like, there's not a whole series of failure stuff that you go through in order to, like, get a hold of something. Like, one of the concepts of grappling and the stealth and stuff when they have guns, like, everything works so well in order to be fun.
I definitely understand what you're saying. And, like, to connect both your guys' ideas about polish and sort of being simple in some ways. When I'm doing combat, you know, when I'm circled by four or five guards and kicking them in the face and I'm grappling up somewhere, I feel like I'm less like trying to win combat and kill guys and get a score. I'm just kind of like participating in those animations and observing them and like enjoying the animations of seeing Batman moving and in motion, you know, like just
it because, is incredible to watch
because of how polished those things are and how fluid they are and the cape and the, I mean, the quality of the character model. I've kind of been saying from the beginning, like that's what I'm there for, just to observe Batman looking amazing. It's great.
Do you find yourself sort of slowing down the combat on accident just to soak it up? Like, I realize that you can be as fast as you want on the controls, and it scales with your speed. Like, you can be like, bam, battering, punch, 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 like as fast as you can, or you can kind of like slow it down just to like get more into the what's going on visually.
Well, the pacing of the combat is, I mean, it does require you, if you're going to chain your attack, it does require you to strike in, you know, a certain time.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just sit there and then
absolutely not. But there's like, I've realized that I could go a lot faster than I actually am if I wanted to.
To some extent, there is a limit to how fast you can go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And actually, when you're chaining attacks, you go faster. So the timing of you know when you push attack buttons depends on how fast you're or how big of an attack chain you've got going, and how willing it is to interrupt animations to let you counter another guy that's about to hit you. So there is a lot of stuff going on there. It's a much more, like I've said before, it's a much more complex combat system than it appears to be at first.
Mm-hmm.
I get what you're saying, though, Andy. It's kind of the difference between watching the combo meter as you just kind of jam the mouse button and watching the combat and just really trying to organically time and taking time with the attacks and enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of obsessed with the combat, really. Like, just last night, I was playing the DLC. It's called, like, the Insanity Mode, where it's just a perpetual fight. They keep dropping new guys in. Everyone you take out, they drop another one in, and then it scales up, and they throw in more guys until it's just a huge brawl. It's like the Mr. Smith fight, or Agent Smith fight in the second Matrix movie, where there's just tons of... And they throw in, like, the lunatics, who in the story game are pretty easy to take out. You know, just, like, pretty much one hit takes them down. But you have to do a ground pound to keep them down, which is actually kind of pointless because they just send in a new one anyway. So, but it does make it a little bit harder. So I've just been kind of obsessively replaying that, and it's the kind of thing that makes me just like, I'm going to stop at midnight. I just keep telling me I'm going to stop at midnight, and then at like 12:40, I'm still playing. It's like I just can't stop myself from pushing the try again button. It's ridiculous.
That's great.
And yeah, see if you can beat 80,000 points in that mode. Yeah. That's my challenge to you guys.
I'll see what I can do.
Evan, what are you playing? Oh, wait, no, did I just ask you? No.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so you're rationing Batman.
Yes.
Andy, what are you playing?
Yeah, you're same.
Also said you're playing Batman.
And Scribblenauts. If that counts.
How far into Batman are you?
Like, 30% or something, according to the I don't know how far that is in actual, because you probably don't 100% the game when you complete it.
Yeah, because it measures collection.
It's tracking the riddle solving. I think it's also tracking the challenges.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of slowly replaying it on hard, which the main thing that it does is remove the warning that people are attacking you. So your only indication that it's time to counter.
Yeah.
The only indication is that it's time to counter is the actual animation. So that makes combat significantly more difficult.
Yeah, certainly.
But in addition to that, I've been playing some Crimecraft, which is a little underwhelming, I got to say. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's underpopulated. There's one server, and every time I've been on there, it says population low, and like there just aren't that many PvP games going. There are a few matches. It's a very instanced MMO. If you don't know what it is, it's kind of a Guild Wars style MMO where every combat area is instanced. There are like different areas of a city you run around in and do all your MMOE, crafting and auction houses and trainers and all that kind of stuff. And you can upgrade your weapons a little bit, but all of the actual shooting gameplay happens within instances. So, You go into an instance and either shoot other players or you shoot kind of really dumb fast respawning bots. It's not terrible. It's just kind of forgettable shooter. Like the shooting is very forgettable, and all the weapons are very standard: pistol, shotgun, SMG, assault rifle, rocket launcher, grenade. You know, it's like not all that interesting. You upgrade the weapons and they get faster and more powerful, but they're still just basic guns, and there are some abilities you get that you can go stealth, or you can do detect stealth, or you can do just basic little bonuses that you can get throughout the game. It's just it makes me wonder why I'm not playing like Battlefield Heroes for free.
And actually, I read today, by the way, apparently 2 million users are, maybe not playing it, but they're signed up to do so.
Yeah, I've got 2 million registered players in Battlefield Heroes, which is pretty impressive. I'm trying to contact EA to find out, right, I did contact EA trying to find out how many of those players are in the U.S., because I think that would be an interesting number to see if it's a domestic success. Because I think it's getting more hype in Europe than it is here.
It is. It seems to be.
But our reviewer liked it. He thought it was good, not great, but for free, that's pretty good. That's another one I'm planning to spend a little more time in. And it does have more variety just with vehicles that Crimecraft just doesn't have. And it also has persistent characters that level up and can get new clothes and stuff like that to make you look distinct. So it's kind of the Crimecraft thing, only more cartoony, obviously, and with less. Oh, one thing that really kind of annoys me about Crimecraft is you get a bunch of loot from doing these PvE missions,
mm-hmm.
and so you pick up boxes basically that are littered around the map, usually with a bunch of mobs guarding them. So you pick up the boxes, and then when you get out of the map, you open the boxes and you get loot. And the loot is literally trash, like 95% of the time. It's
actual like, trash, garbage.
It's like rusty razor blades or broken switchblade or a scrap of cloth it's such unexciting loot. I mean, even like in a fantasy MMO, you might get like a rabbit's foot, like a tattered rabbit's foot or something. But it's just like something that has a little bit more character to it than something you would find in your dumpster. It just kind of takes the fun out of it for me. So I can't say I really recommend that one. Anyway, I guess that'll just about wrap it up for us today. We have another episode coming up next week. We hope we'll do it on Thursday, not Friday this time. In preparation for that, you should definitely send us some questions. We need those sent to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com, or you can call us on the phone and leave us a message. Andy, what's that number?
The number for the phone is 1-877-404-1337, extension 724.
All right. And keep that to a minute, because otherwise it will cut you off.
It does cut you off automatically. It's not me pushing stop, I promise.
It's totally Andy.
No.
You can also go to PCGamer.com and to subscribe to the magazine, or check us out on Facebook at Facebook.com/PCGamerMagazine or on Twitter at PCGamer. Please do. So we will see you all next week. Thanks, guys.
Andy, can you just be a hippie for the entirety of the podcast? Hey, man, that Alpha Protocol, dude, it's gonna blow your mind, bro.
I just think that like gaming is good for the environment.